Welcome back. This is Christina Wise, your host. Have you ever thought about writing a book? If so, then you'll want to listen to this conversation I had with my good friend, Sam Horn. In this episode, Sam inspired me to write my book number 2 by sharing her magical book writing framework that makes outlining a book and then writing it super simple. She took away any great excuse I've had to procrastinate to get to writing. Sam is a prolific author who specializes in helping people crystallize their communications and write their book. She's truly one of the most clever people I've ever met. Sam is founder and CEO of Intrigue Agency. She's done 3 TEDx talks and written 9 books. One of her most well-loved books is called Tongue Fu, which gives you an idea of just how clever she really is. Another book of hers that I absolutely love is called Pop, which is all about naming and pitching things. If you're a business owner, you know how important this skill is. Sam is an internationally popular speaker, and she's also one of the founders of the Maui Writers Conference, which is like the Cannes Film Festival for writers. She's helped countless writers by teaching them and inspiring them, and she's definitely just inspired me to get to my 2nd book. So grab a coffee, sit down, and be inspired to write. Please enjoy my conversation with the great Sam Horn. Sam Horn, oh my goodness, thank you so much for being on the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. I've been looking forward to this for a very long time.
Well, that makes 2 of us, Christina.
All right. For everybody listening, I just want everybody to know Sam is one of my mentors. I've had just such the beautiful opportunity to spend time with Sam, to be chatting around a pool or while she was in the pool, actually, and really just talking about really good life and business and reality, no bullshit. And Sam, you are just such a breath of fresh air when it comes to speaking truth. So for everybody listening, please introduce yourself and just share a little bit of Sam's story. Who are you?
Aha. Well, I was raised in Southern California in a small town, more horses than people. And I think you and I talked about this, Christina, is that one of the joys of that, my sister and I both had our own horses when we were like 6 and 7 years old, and we would be gone all day on our horses. And our parents didn't worry about us, and they didn't say, be careful, you know, and it was like, figure it out. So you get bucked off, figure it out. You know, your bridle breaks, figure it out. And it was pivotal in me being adventurous and independent. And instead of worrying about something going wrong and seeing the world as a dangerous place, you know, I see it as an adventurous place. So I'll always be grateful to my parents for that incredible upbringing and to what horses contributed to my confidence.
Yeah. So, yeah, thank you. And I resonate with that. It's funny. I think even the times that we're in right now that we'll talk a little bit about, because I'd like your perspective. But part of even a metaphor I've used is it's like we've been playing on Earth, and we've gotten really used to Earth, and now we've just been planted on Mars. So we can be really scared. Maybe there's some fear built in because it's unknown surroundings, but hell, it's an adventure. Like, game on. Let's go turn over rocks and figure out how to survive and thrive in this new environment.
You know, 100%, Pema Chodron says nothing ever really goes away until it teaches us what we need to know. And you and I both agreed this is a message. This is a wake-up call. What are we supposed to learn from this? What are we supposed to do differently? Because if we get the message from it and we adapt and we do things differently, and as you said, instead of being scared, we get resourceful, we're going to be fine.
Absolutely. So you are an author of how many books? I see your pop book right behind you, but share a little bit about your books and what you're doing to help other authors like myself bring their creations to the world.
I feel like a Vanna White, you know, it's like, and there they are. And there's some vowels in there, I'm sure. So 9 books from New York publishers.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your books.
You know, I because I know many of your listeners, like you said, are interested in writing a book, I'm going to put you in the scene of a pivotal change in my life that really set me on the course of being an author, because I helped start and run the Maui Writers Conference, kind of what Cannes is to the film industry, we were to the publishing industry. And so the very first day of the very first one, I'm running and making sure all the sessions are starting on time, and I pop into Michael Larson's session. Now, Michael Larson was a literary agent, and he literally and figuratively wrote the book on how to get an agent. So he's talking about the importance of titles. And he says, you know, titles sell books. He said, I have represented nonfiction authors just on the basis of a good title because I know I can get a deal for it. And someone in the audience said, well, like, what's an example of a good title? And he said, Tung Fu is the best title I've heard in 10 years. And Christina, I went out and I plopped down in a chair because Tung Fu was my title. But you know what? I was a single mom. I was jumping on planes and speaking. I didn't have time to write. However, my epiphany was the more I spoke, the more I'd speak. If I was going to be a visionary on behalf of my career, I would actually set paid speaking aside for 3 months and go all in on writing a quality book because that would drive my future more than anything else I can do. Well, Tung Fu, it's 25 years, Christina. It's still being sold around the world, 17 languages. It was number 3 in South Korea last year, 25 years after I wrote it. And so I'm kind of reaching out to everyone listening, because if you think, yeah, I want to write a book, but I'm busy, but I'm a mom, but I'm working 2 jobs, whatever. If you want to be a visionary on behalf of your career, understand the more you keep doing that stuff, the more you'll keep doing that stuff. That writing is a pebble in the pond of your future in a way that few other things are.
Oh, I love that. I'm writing that down. Writing is a pebble in the pond of your future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, I mean, right now, in fact, I mean, we're right in the middle. We're all quarantined as we speak and self-isolating and doing what we're doing. And I would think there's really 2 directions to go in, you know, to simplify things. One is to really follow the media, probably more screen time than less screen time. We're not even getting out as much as we were for obvious reasons. And it's really easy to get hunkered down, I think, in that type of mindset, thinking almost that this is going to go away pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And it's very easy, I think, for myself included, that it's almost hypnotic in a way. You're pulled in and there's more Netflix time and there's more news time and even more social media time. And it's just screen all the day. And even all our meetings are on Zoom now. Another direction could be, what if I took out as much of that screen time as possible, and what could I replace it with during this time where things have really been shut down and slowed down? Like, our plates have been cleaned for us in so many capacities. So is there a better time than to start writing that book right now?
You know, Clarissa Pinkola Estes has this wonderful quotes about, we are made for these times. And writers, you are made for these times. And I 100% agree. About 3 weeks ago, I was watching the news, and I'm normally a pretty proactive person. I found myself spiraling into a panic. It's like, oh my gosh, are we going to run out of venom? Oh, are we going to run out of water and food? Oh, are we going to do that? And then I asked myself this question. I asked myself, can I do anything about this? I couldn't do anything about it. I couldn't help. I couldn't make it better. It was a misuse of my time and mind. So I turned off the news, and I don't watch it anymore, Christina, because I don't think it helps. We cannot do anything about it. We're spiraling into fear. So you're right. Take that time and attention, and let's put it into something valuable, you know, where we're contributing, where we're creative, where we're being proactive instead of panic. And if you'd like, we can take a couple minutes right now and I can show people how to kickstart their book.
Would you please? I need a little swift kickstart myself.
Okay. Now tell me you have paper and pen right in front of you. Do you
have
paper?
Right here. I have it. Yes, I do.
Hey, good. Okay. In 17 years of Maui Writers Conference, our authors didn't agree on anything except this. You ready? Ink it when you think it. And this is so important. People listening, if you don't have paper and pen right now, go quick, grab some, because I'm going to give you a process in just a few minutes, honestly, that can get all these thoughts swirling in your head, that can get them on one page and give you clarity. So now I start with a story about a mutual friend of ours. You know Sherry Salata, right?
Love her, okay. Yes.
For our audience, Sherry Salata was the executive producer of the Oprah Winfrey Show, and then she was in charge of Harpo and OWN for many years. So several years ago, I was at a meeting where Ariel Ford was interviewing Sherry Salata. Now, in the middle of the interview, almost as an aside, Sherry said, well, if I ever write a book, I know what I'm going to call it. And Ariel said, what? And she said, I did everything all wrong, and it turned out all right. Well, that's a drop the pen moment. I mean, I wrote a book on titles. I know good titles when I hear them. Now, that was not what the interview was about, so they just moved on to something else. But at break, I ran up to Sherry. I said, tell me you're writing that book. And she said, Sam, I don't know where to start. I mean, do I start with Oprah's birthday party where we had Chris Rock and Michael Jordan and Beyonce? And, you know, do I start with delivering a baby in the parking lot of a 7-Eleven? Where do I start? And I said, you are right. If we do not know where to start, we don't start. So I'm going to give everyone on the call right now, including you, a place to start. Okay. Fresh piece of paper, put up in the upper left-hand corner, 200. Just put down 200. Let's presuppose our book is 200 pages. It's not a 350-page doorstopper, and it's not a 100-page move my cheese. 200, right? Sounds good. All right, let's presuppose no chapter is longer than 10 pages. So put underneath it 10 pages. And the reason is it sets up the psychology of completion. Now, Dan Brown, the author of the Da Vinci Code, was the first mainstream author to really understand that if you're plowing through a book with 30-page chapters, it's hard work. We feel like we're not making any progress. We put the book down. Who knows if we come back, right? Because we feel like we're never getting through it. He was the first one to have like 2- and 3-page chapters. And the psychology of completion says that rewarded behavior gets repeated. So see, if we finish a chapter, you know, it's like, wow, that's a little dopamine hit, right? And we're much more likely to, that's what makes a page turner. Furthermore, by the way, page turners are intentional. They are not accidental. And at the end of each chapter, he would have something like, he opened the door and there was the last person he expected to see. How could you not turn the page, right? So everyone, 10 page or less chapters. All right. So guess what? Underneath that, put 20 chapters, right? 20 chapters. All right. Now on that page, put 4 columns of 5 boxes. So horizontally, 5 boxes. Line 2, 5 boxes. And do it right now, because we're going to talk you through a process. Like I said before, 5 minutes ago, we knew we wanted to write a book, but we don't know what's going to go in it. We don't know what the table of contents looks like, the outline. So we just keep spinning our wheels. We're going to put it all on one page. So let me know when you've got your 4 lines of 5 boxes. Ready? Okay, box number 1 up in the upper left. This is going to be your intro. I'm actually going to give you the ingredients of the intro right now. Sound good? Write down, why me? ? Now you would jump into the scene of where you became a woman on a mission about this topic. So just write down right now, what's your where story? Where were you when the lights went on and the band played and you thought, I've got to write about this. Too many people are having problems with this. You know, I've got information that could help them. Or, you know, a story where you just thought, enough, you know, this shouldn't be happening. Somebody's got to do something about this. I'm as much as somebody as anybody. I'm going to do something about it. So why me? All right. Next, still in box 1, put why this topic. Now, you would Google startling statistics about your topic. So if you're writing about money, or if you're writing about wealth and what matters or something like that, you would actually put into Google, what are startling statistics about money? And now you know that what most people don't have more than like $400 in the bank. They're one, you know, paycheck away from being destitute, etc. So this why this topic section is where we bring in research or evidence that shows it's not just us that think this is important. It's not just us that's been through this or dealt with this. Here are the statistics about domestic violence, or here are the statistics about bullying, or here are the statistics about that. So people get perspective and understand just how bad or pervasive this is, right? All right, next, still in the first box, we have why me, why this topic. Now the next one is why you. And we would start this section by saying, Have you ever, you know, let's say we're talking about confidence. Have you ever walked into a room and felt like a wallflower? You know, have you ever struggled what to say, you know, when you're meeting someone for the first time? You know, have you ever not spoken up at a meeting because, you know, you were too self-critical? So we ask 3 to 5 things where our readers would be going, well, yes, I've had that happen. Yes, I've been in that situation. Yes, it's what are their cares and concerns? What are their wishes and their worries? And write it down right now. So what are their cares and concerns? What are their wishes and their worries? So it's have you ever, colon, bullet, bullet, bullet. And at the end, people are going, yes, I relate to that. That's happened to me. I wonder about that. I've had problems with that. And the next thing we say is, well, if you said yes to any of the above questions, you're in the right place. You know, or if any of the above sound familiar, join the club. All right. Now the next is why now? So we have why me? Why this topic? Why you? Why now? Still all in the first box. And why this is important is because John Cotter out of Harvard is probably one of the country's experts on change. And do you know what he said? Do you know what the number one prerequisite is for change? Urgency. And that's exactly right. Right? So maybe you even quote Judy Tenuta, the comedian who said, my parents always told me I wouldn't amount to anything because I procrastinated so much. I told them, just you wait. So see, here's why are people waiting to do something about this, right? They may agree with you intellectually. Yes, I need to get my finances in order. Yes, I need to start saving more. Yes, I need to be smarter about my, but see, if right now with COVID and Corona, they're in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? They're in survival needs. And if it feels like self-actualization, it kind of feels far away and distant. It's not urgent. They got things, you know, they got 2 kids at home they got to take care of. You know, they've got to worry about where they're going to get their money for next month's bills, etc. So why is this urgent? And people cannot afford to wait. They cannot put it off. Why is it in their best interest to act on this now? And then one more. Why this way? So why me? Why this topic? Why you? Why now? Why this way? And this is where you talk straight to the reader about why you wrote this book this way. You may say, I know you're busy. I know you got a lot on your plate. And that's why I divided this into 10-page chapters so that you can dip in and get value, even if you only have a few minutes to spare. Or you may say, what don't I normally like about books? Well, you may not like books with infobesity, with listicles of do this, do this, do this. It just feels piled on, you know? So maybe you say, and that's why I've started every chapter with a real life story. And these are diverse examples with men and women and 20-somethings right out of college with college debt and 60-somethings going into retirement. So that every chapter has a different example that you're going to be able to relate to. Or you may say, why I wrote the book this way is because I think that the advice out there is wrong. I think that what people are telling, you know, being told is out of date and it's actually backfiring. And why I wrote this book is because I really believe it's important for you to get fresh, new information you have not heard before. So do you see how? Now, we wanted to distill all that into 4 pages. And the reason is, Richard Branson said, time is the new money. I think time is the new trust. And the clock starts ticking the second we start talking. And like when people pick up a book, the jury is out, right? Is this going to be worth my time and mind? And if we distill all this into 4 pages, they know where you're coming from, where you begin to care. That's when we begin to care. They understand this isn't just affecting us. Here's all this statistics that supports the importance of this. You know, that I've got skin in the game because you asked questions. You turned your book into a dialogue instead of a monologue, all in the first 4 pages where I understand how this is relevant to me. I understand why it's urgent, you know, and I feel grateful to you because you wrote the book and you anticipated my objections. I'm in first 4 pages. the rest of the book is, okay, here's how we can do this. And if right now you would start spitballing this, you would say, okay, I want to talk about this example, and I want to talk about these three steps, and I want to talk about why people don't do it. And this is the creative process. It does not have to be in order. It does not have to be sequential. You just, this one, and this is a turning point, and this is something people always want to know. Because at the end of it, what I told Sherry is, Sherry, you're an executive producer. You're going to executive produce your book. Just put down Oprah's birthday party, 7-Eleven, you know, this and that and so forth. Then step back. And you know this because you've done this. You will look at this one page and you will go, well, that's really interesting. That deserves to go up front. These two chapters are kind of alike. I'll put them together in one. What haven't I brought? Oh, I haven't talked about that. Well, that deserves a chapter. And you know, in 10 minutes, swirling in the head, all of a sudden can be on one page. And now we start fleshing out our chapters, rock and roll.
Wow. I mean, and even what, I mean, I've got chill bumps right now because one, the first thing that came to me is I can do that. And then the second thing is like, oh, if I get started, I can keep going. It really is the getting started point that it's so difficult.
It's, you know, E.L. Doctorow was asked what it was like writing a book. And he thought about it for a moment. He said, it's kind of like driving a car at night. You can only see to the end of your headlights, but you can make the whole trip that way. See, these chapters are your headlights, right? Oh, okay, I can do that. I can write out that example. Oh, I know these three steps. I just did them in a webinar last week. I can write out those three. And as you said, now we have a starting point. We can start moving it forward. And the book starts taking shape right in front of our eyes.
I think for me, one of the big stumbling first one is just getting started. So I could do this right away. The second piece is the story in my head. When I wrote my first book, I mean, I did nothing but write the book and just sat at my desk for 30 days straight. And then after that, editing and cleaning up. So it really was like a 90-day project that's all I focused on. Yeah. So now but that was really the launch of this business and the career I'm in now. So I think that's the second piece outside of getting started is, I don't like the words find the time, but like, how do I create the time now? Because that's the only comparison I have in my head is how I did it last time. So what do you advise for, especially right now? Great. One, I have different time than I used to have. And at the same time, it's a little bit urgent and I'm got new creations and other things going out as well.
You know, I am so glad you asked that, and I'm not on commission or anything. I suggest you get otter.ai. Everyone, after our call, is go to the App Store. It's free because it is not only an instant voice recorder, instant transcript in real time. Because what we're all going to do is reframe what it means to write. Like you said, you had 30 days. You wrote all day, every day. Well, if we think that's what it looks like to write, who has 30 days all day, every day? Even if we think I have to have like 2 or 3 hours to sit down and make progress, these days, you know, many people are like working from home and maybe they've got family members they're taking care of. It's like, who has 2 or 3 hours, right? However, we've got time to think. We can be doing the dishes and we can be talking out an example with otter.ai. So we're doing our dishes. And at the end of that 20 minutes, we have just talked out one of our chapters. And what's most important, Robert Frost said, no joy in the writer, no joy in the reader, is that many of us are conversant with what we want to say. But when we sit down to write, we take on this kind of like fake voice because we're trying to impress or we're self-conscious and the words don't flow. When we're just talking about it, especially you, Christina, is like, you know, you speak on this all the time. So see, you can talk it out and it's your voice, right? And you've got your passion in it because you're trying to connect with people and you know it's important. So in real time, 5 minutes here, 20 minutes here, etc., You are writing with your voice in real time, and Otter gives you a little transcript, and you, oh, that goes in that chapter, oh, that goes in that chapter, oh, that goes in that chapter. And the goal is progress, not perfection, right? We're not trying to get it perfect. We're trying to get it out on the page, because we start collecting and fleshing out the book, and then we can sit down and start cleaning it up, right?
All right, you're making this too easy. You're not giving me any other good excuses to postpone writing this damn book. All right, so tell us about more of the boxes.
Okay, then the first box is a definition. So let's say you're talking about, financial smarts or something like that. We may have someone who's talking about parenting. We may have someone who's talking about stress management or health or customer service or something. So in the first chapter, it's like, so what do we mean by that? How do we define it? And then do you know what we do? We have a 10W quiz. We have a crowdsource quiz, and I'll give you an example of what I mean. Is that when I wrote about bullies, I knew that many people did not even use the word bully. They think a bully is like Bluto with, big biceps. They don't know that an 8-year-old kid can be a bully. They don't know that a 80-pound, 80-year-old grandmother can be a bully. So I knew I needed to define that word, and then I knew I needed a quiz to put people in the situation where they go, well, yes, this person does that. Well, yes, this person does that. Well, yet, oh my goodness. And in a Socratic way, they are now understanding that someone that they are dealing with, that it's not their fault, that they are not the one that should be tiptoeing, around on eggshells because this person is so angry. So would you like a sample quiz right now that you and everyone else can use?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. This is a 10W quiz. The first question is what? So what is the definition of this? What do you mean by customer service? What do you mean by good parenting? What do you mean by well-being or something? So what, right? Now, the second is a who. Who modeled this for you? So who is a walking, talking example of a great parent? Or I'm going to stick with you, and then people can extrapolate. So what is the book that you're working on right now?
It's Money Mindset.
Okay, Money Mindset. All right. This is perfect, right? I mean, number one, you have your definition. Won't it be interesting to find out what other people say and how other people think about the word money mindset, right?
Yes.
So do you see how right in the beginning, yes, you share your example, but then you say, I talk with a 20-something with college debt, and to her, money mindset was like maybe in 10 years she would finally be able to do the work that she loved, because right now she's just paying off her debt, right? You may talk to a 65-something and said a money mindset is that I can't sleep at night because I'm so worried about my 401k running out, or my pension being yanked away or something, right? Different things to different people. Okay, number two is who modeled a good money mindset? However you define it, if you define it as someone who always balanced their earning and their spending or something like that, then who modeled that for you? Who taught that for you? Who's a walking, talking example of it? Who's like exhibit A, the poster child, right? Okay, question number three, who's the anti-example? Who was a terrible example? Who, was the opposite of this?
Got it.
Okay, now number four is when. When is a time you had a great money mindset? Maybe you were flush 5 years ago. Money was pouring in. It was like, it was just really great. So when was a time that you really had a great money mindset? You can see the next one coming. And now we're on five, right? I think number five is, okay, when is a time you did not have a good money mindset? When is a time you worried constantly, and you were just living in fear around money? You were not living in abundance. You were living in scarcity. Okay, next question, number six. Why is this important? And now some people may say, because if I don't feel like I am living in abundance, that I have enough, I am enough, and I have enough, I worry all the time. You know, it permeates all my day. I can't enjoy something because I go out to dinner and I'm thinking, I can't afford this. Or like, I really want the steak, but I got to get the macaroni and cheese or something, right? Okay. Now, the next one is number 7, then why don't we do it? If this is okay, number 8 is, what is your advice? We give people an opportunity to be an expert. You know, so what have you learned about this? If someone said, so what do you recommend? What do you suggest? What is your one piece of advice about how you can do this? Then number 9 is, who should I interview about this? Who do you think is a walking talk example of this, is a great resource that I should interview? And then number 10 is, what could I cover in this book or in my presentation that would be useful for you? What is something you don't know how to do and you really need an expert giving you step-by-step instructions or reassurance or comfort? Now, in the book, I do not put questions 9 and 10. However, guess what? You can print that out. You can put it on your website right now. You can pass it out to people, and I interview everybody. I interview back when we get into not social distancing or physical distance, I would interview waiters. I would interview Uber drivers, because now we are giving real life variety of voices to our work. So it's not conceptual. It's not philosophical. And it's not just our opinion or our expertise. It gives a breadth and depth to our work. And sometimes people are thinking, I can't fill up a 200-page book. You know, I'm going to run out of things to say. I guarantee you will never run out of things to say. If you interview people about your topic and ask about their experiences and ask about their epiphanies and their insights, and it makes the book just so relevant, because these are real-world people who have been there, done that.
Yeah, it's making me think that another book that I'm thinking about writing as well is The 10 Things I Learned from One-on-One Coaching Over the Past 12 Months.
Oh, wow. I'm already excited about
it. Yeah, that. And it came out of, I spoke this at my last event, because what I did, I've done the money coaching I've done one to many for the most part, and I didn't really do one-on-ones, but this last 12 months, I decided, you know, I don't add one-on-ones. And just get over this time for money type mindset thing, because I felt like I was disconnected in a way from having, like you said, these interview type conversations. And what was so unexpected from these last 12 months is what I learned, because I learned that I have my perspective of things because I've been doing this for a long time and I'm really good at it. So, you know, I'm not attached to the beginner questions and that type of thing. So by virtue of interviewing like high income entrepreneurs and then getting their questions when they're, and it's a very safe environment, they're asking things and telling me things that they would never say publicly. So now I'm like, whoa, I just never would have thought of that would be a concern. I never thought people would ask me, what's the best way to pay yourself? That seems so obvious to me. I would never think that people were commingling their monies in a certain way and didn't know how to separate them. That seems obvious to me. And so at my last event, I put this slideshow together. It's the 10 thing I learned. And it was so good that the audience, their jaws were on the floor. Like, oh my God, I had those exact same questions and I was afraid to ask them. And now you just gave me the answers to those same questions. And I just was completely blown away by having these 12 months of these one-on-one safe, vulnerable conversations.
Boom. We're going to do this in real time. I'm going to show you how this works. Okay. Because everyone listening is going to see that from now on, our life is our lab. And when we say something, we immediately think, okay, where would that go in the book? So right now I just took notes on what you said. So in your storyboard, right? Put down safe in one of the chapters, because that's really crucial to this working, right? As you talk commingling, put that down, right? is that another chapter, put down, pay yourself, right? So right now, riff again, think about what else did you learn in this last year of one-on-one? What else did you learn?
I learned that people because this concept of tax write-off, they overspend in their business because they think they're buying things that are tax write-offs that they wouldn't otherwise be spending. So they think, oh, I should spend this because it's a tax write-off. And they're overspending in their business, like they're overspending in their household without any concept that they're actually robbing themselves of profitability, which is the lifeblood of a business.
Write it down right now. Tax write-off. And see, the language is so alive, robbing yourself, right? And because they're overspending. So see, this is why Otter is capturing these very juicy words, right? This is not intellectualizing the topic. I can see that you are right there and your passion about this topic is coming out with this very juicy language. Good. Now, you use the word vulnerable too. So talk to me about vulnerable. Why are people vulnerable about this?
Well, because it's a very vulnerable place to admit that, wow, you actually have a pretty good business publicly and it looks like you're making a lot of money. But behind closed doors, you're confused and scared and don't know the answers to these questions and don't know who to turn to with this feeling is I should know the answers to this.
Wow. See, write it down and write down public, private self. And that I love this so much because in 60 seconds, you have this incredibly, I'm not going to use the word juicy again, evocative, compelling, intriguing, honest reveal that many people everyone's looking at them and saying, wow, look at them, right? And their private self is they're confused. They don't feel like they can talk about it to anyone. Probably even ashamed. You think they're ashamed too?
A lot of shame. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's going to be a great chapter. Good. What else have you learned?
Yeah, I think there's the shame that's almost in one chapter and another, it's the confusion. Like there's this confusion of top line. I appear to make a lot of money. Like it looks like I made $500,000, $1 million. Why am I strapped month to month? Why do I feel broke all the time? Why can't I get ahead? I'm working so hard. Like I never stop working. I just can't understand it. So it's this confusion of why I'm making money, but I don't have money.
Okay. Now you just, once again, in real time showed us, we were talking about vulnerability and we talked about the public private self and so forth and shame, but then you picked up on the word confusion. And what you just said is confusion and shame are two big topics. They do not belong in the same chapter, right? They belong in separate chapters. So for everyone listening, do you hear how if you're talking about one of your steps or one of your stories and there are two leads in that story or two important ideas in that example, don't jam them all in one chapter. Go ahead. Shame or vulnerability is one. Confusion's another. So you are listening as you're talking about your content. And when something earns its own chapter, put it there.
Love that.
Good. All right. Now I'm going to feed you some of the questions I feed my clients. Okay. That have us really discerning, help us have discerning content, not low hanging fruit content. What really surprised you about this in this last year of one-on-one work? Something was not what you anticipated. It kind of was really shocking or unexpected. What was that?
I mean, bottom line, it was, I'll use the word confusing again, but that there is a rampant misunderstanding or lack of understanding of the fundamental operations of money, of just how to run it in your small business, your micro business, in your household. Just very, like, just the kind of the basic understanding that, in my point of view, is required to get ahead of your money, to ultimately to build wealth, to get out of that month to month, to get out of that grind, to get out of all that feeling, that angst that people carry. So that's part one. The second piece is how much angst and anxiety that these human beings that I care about, that my clients carry, on a regular basis just because they don't know what to do and they're trying and working so hard. And then the third kind of piece to that is that there's just really this fear of money or this desire to not approach it and just want to think it's going to work out. So to keep it at bay, like, and that it's going to work out. So there's just this real wall between people and their desire to just get good with money, like to learn about it or to be with it. Like there's this very thick wall in between that people just won't go through or jump over or crumble or crush or something, you know?
You are a shining example of how in minutes you are fleshing out your book. Now, let's remember, this is about money mindset. And you are talking about money moods, and you are talking about confusion, and you're talking about fear, and you're talking about angst and anxiety, and you're talking about misunderstanding. So see, all of these are mindsets, right? And once again, what you are saying, I always listen for what's original. What pops out of what you're saying that is not a cliche or a platitude that really is, you know, it's like the first time I've heard it. I write down the fear wall, okay? Because when you were talking about fear, you were talking about this wall people have around money, you know? So the fear wall is a great visual term, isn't it? You know, and furthermore, what you are doing now is you are curating your own content. You are reporting back from the front line. So you're like a museum docent. Okay, 60-second story, and I'll share why it pertains. I'll always remember a good friend came to visit me in Washington, D.C., and it was snowing. So we decided, oh, we're going to go to the National Gallery, and we're going to have a docent tour. Well, the West Wing, which had, you know, all of the Monets and Matisses and so forth, all the classics, was booked. So we went over to the East Wing, which was all the abstract art, the Picassos and so forth. Now, I'm kind of ashamed to say that I used to be one of those persons that would look at Picasso and would say, looks like he threw paint up against the wall, right? It was just my friend and myself with the docent. And she would say, so what do you think? Well, it looks like someone threw paint on the wall. Uh-huh. And do you see any consistency? Do you see any patterns? Huh. And by asking Socratic questions, to this day, it was one of the most fascinating, eye-opening days of my life. And it was because she is doing what you're doing. You are reporting back from the front lines and you are asking, you know, do you have a fear wall? Do you have angst or anxiety around this? You know, do you have a public and a private self about this? You know, do you have a misunderstanding about the basics and how it was worked? Were you ever taught about this? Are you in your 30s and 40s and 50s and still trying to figure it out on your own? So do you see how you are sharing your expertise in a Socratic way where you are not just telling people what to do, right? You are sharing these stories and what you've discovered and what has surprised you and asking people if it's relevant or true for them in a way they do not feel scolded or shamed. They feel like they are self-identifying with this, and they, in a face-saving way, they are open to your expertise because, once again, you're not lecturing them. And it all has come out like in a few-minute conversation. Do you feel how alive this book is? How people are going to be so grateful to you for writing this book?
Yeah, you know, what's resonating with me too is that when I have these, it's like, for me, it's almost, I'm guessing, like a therapist or someone. When somebody's really opening up their deepest, darkest secrets in a way, that to be in that space and hold that space and just empathize and understand with where nobody feels bad for that, whatever their worst fear is or the worst thing they've ever done, you know, it's having, feeling safe and no judgment or criticism that comes with that. And that's so important to be able to fully open up, because when it comes to money, like, it's a different form of therapy in a way. We have to be able to do that to get to the bottom and underneath of why that wall even exists. And part of this too, for my story, is like, I've made all these same mistakes. Like, I can't judge. The only reason why I have an answer to this is because I've done that exact same thing. And actually not too long ago again. So, you know, it's like, I get this. I can be here with you because I've been here myself.
Okay. See, you are just talking out your book. You are just talking out your intro right there. Why me? Boom, you just did it. It's because I've been there, done this. I'm an expert on this, and I just did it again, last year or something. So that is both why you care so much, why you're an advocate and an ambassador and on a mission about this, and it's also incredibly relatable. And then why this way? You talked about, it's like, some people call me the money therapist. And the reason is because they feel so safe. They feel embarrassed or shamed about this and vulnerable around this. And I don't make them feel worse. I actually make them feel better. So just like a share therapist, where you feel like you can really be honest and talk about what's going on instead of trying to hide it. This is the book. This is the place where you can come face to face with your money mindset in a way that you are not going to feel ashamed. You're going to feel mobilized.
Hmm. Which is my goal.
Boom.
Wow. Yeah. Well, my God, thank you. This is why we work with people like you to pull these gems out of us.
Can I share another story that I think that this is not something you deal with, although I would say 9 out of 10 writers deal with this. The very first year of the Maui Writers Conference, I'm walking the beach to get my intro straight, because in addition to being executive director, I was the MC. So in the morning was the only time all day I had to like make sure I had the opening keynote and the closing keynote intro straight. Here's a woman sitting on the beach crying. And I went over and I said, "Are you okay?" She said, "I'm not okay." I said, "What's going on?" She says, "I don't belong here." I said, "You don't belong here?" She said, "Who am I to write a book?" She said, "It's like you're putting yourself up on a pedestal and saying, I know and you don't. It's like you're saying you're perfect. You have it all together. I don't have it all together." It's almost like it's arrogant. And I said, "Well, what do you want to write about?" And she and her husband had adopted a child, and he was very challenging. And she said, "I went to the bookstore. I went to the library to try and find books to help me figure it out." There were all these Pollyanna books that just talked about what a blessing it was to be an adoptive parent. They made me feel worse. She said, "I want to write the book I can't find." And I said, "Well, what's an example of what you want to write about?" And she thought about it for a moment. She said, "I want to talk about the time that Ari is 3 years old and I fix spaghetti for dinner. And he reaches across the table and he grabs a handful of spaghetti and he throws it in my face. And my first thought was, my son would never have done that." And the shame that I felt that thought had even occurred to me. I said, "What else?" She said, "I want to talk about, even though Ari is really challenging, when it's time to send pictures of him to his birth mother, I edit out the cute ones because I live in daily fear she's going to change her mind and want him back." I said, "Jana, the question is not, am I perfect? Has it been done before? Do I have a PhD?" I said, "You know what the question to ask is? Would someone reading my book benefit?" Because if you share your stories and someone out there in the middle of nowhere feels like, "I'm not the only one," if someone will be, connected with, then not only do you have the right to write, you have a responsibility to write. You know, if you go online and to Amazon and you look Jana Wolf, Secret Thoughts of an Adoptive Mother, that book has been out for more than 20 years now. And I ran into Jana last year when I spoke at the Hawaii Book and Music Festival, and she said, "You know, Sam, the book has been out for 20 years. Not a week goes by where I don't get a letter from someone saying, I thought I was the only one. So I'm reaching out, and if people have, well, who am I to write a book? I'm not perfect. I don't have a PhD. That is not the question to ask. The question to ask is, would someone benefit from this? And if so, it's not arrogance, it's service. It's an offering.
Wow, I think that's a good place to complete, because I have chill bumps all over my body, and it's so true too. Behind my closed doors of these conversations, what I found is that that is one of the thoughts is, I'm the only one. Here I am successful, but I'm the only one that hasn't figured out this money thing. And that's part of the shame and the fear to talk about it, is this belief that everybody else has it figured out, but I don't. It's like, no, nobody has this figured out. Like, you're just like everyone else. And it reminds me when I was, when I was sick, and a big part of that sick is, it's not only did I physically almost die, but because I got so sick and my strength, because I'm just resilient as hell. Like, I'm just, I'm small but mighty. And so I believe is that I kept a lot of trauma down my entire life. And the way I conquered the world was through success and achievement. And I didn't even know I had trauma. I didn't even know I had anything. But when my body broke down, that was this perfect opportunity for all that repressed and stuffed down trauma that I didn't even know to have, to just rear up right in the middle of all this and show itself as well. So not only do we need to heal your body, you're going to have to heal your mind, spirit, and psychology. So PTSD, full on nightmare, horrific. I mean, it's even hard to try to go back to how bad it was. But anyways, the result of that, I went to see my first therapist and mini therapist after that. I got all sorts of types of therapy. But I just remember this moment. I'm coming to this moment that I was talking to my therapist, and she's in a small room, just she and I, of course. And you have to let go of all this stuff to process it. So you have to, there was a motto that you're as sick as your secrets. And I'm like, oh my God. So all these secrets had to come out. So I shared this one secret that was my secret that I carried so much guilt and shame about. And I said it out loud, and I'm just struggling for this to come out because I'm so ashamed. And she said, is that all? And I'm like, well, what do you mean, is that all? That was horrible that I had those thoughts and feelings, like exactly what you're talking about with this author. And she said, oh my God, Christina, that's so normal. Wow. So here I was carrying this heavy burden my entire life in a way, and repressing something that's just, and so that just helped me out. Like, really? I'm not this horrible, horrible person for having that type of thought or feeling? She's like, no, honey, this is humans. So just being able to share that, for example, so like to your saying, is that so much of, I think, of all of this is we feel like we're alone and we're the only one. It's like, oh no, we're all in this craziness together. We all have these thoughts and feelings. We're all confused. And if I can just help a little bit less confusion, or, just give a little bit more understanding to clear up the misunderstanding, we're just all in better shape.
Yeah. What she said.
Anyway, Sam, so do you have a place where people can find you to go through the rest of the boxes? And,
Sure. There's two things going on. You and I were both talking about how in terms of coronavirus and so forth, it's so important for us to step up and take the lead and give back. So I'm actually doing, this is my give back, is So You Want to Write a Book, write a support group on Facebook. So if you, it's a half hour program live every day, and no upsell, no bait and switch. It's just, I love this. Here is kind of what I've learned over the last 20 years on how you can get the books out of your head and into the world. And so just check out So You Want to Write a Book, Sam Horn, on Facebook Live. And then you can check out my website, which is intrigueagency.com. So it's INTRIGUE, intrigueagency.com. And there's, I have blogs about how to do this. I've got my TEDx talk on there on how to do a great opening. And just did an interview with Vishen Lakihana of Mind Valley. So it's all up there.
I love you. I adore you. I'm so grateful to know you. And thank you very much for being here with me and my listeners.
You're welcome. And to you, right on.
If you're inspired by today's show and you're the kind of person who likes to help others, there are some easy ways that you can help me. First, please subscribe to the Wealthy Wealthy podcast. By doing so, it helps both of us. You'll never miss an episode, and it helps me and my ratings. And if you're able to leave a review, hopefully 5 stars, even better. Finally, if you think your friends and family would enjoy the show, I invite you to share the Wealthy Wealthy podcast with everyone you know. If you have any questions, I'm here. You can email me at support@wealthywealthy.com, and I may even use your question or suggestion for a future podcast episode. Also, if you want to be motivated and inspired more regularly, connect with me on Instagram or LinkedIn at Christina Wise. That's KristinaWise. I believe we are all on this journey together towards finding our sovereignty and freedom. And I'd love to be part of your journey. I'd love to help you, and especially on the financial side. So learn more at sovereigntyacademy.com. As always, thank you so much for listening and being part of the Wealthy Wealthy community.